Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com. Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
She's alive! Alive!
1.21 gigawatts!
What the hell is a gigawatt?
Duh!
Use the intensifier disc. Place it in position on your right.
I guess this thingamabob goes into the what's it here.
Now turn the control 18 degrees to the left.
You have successfully accomplished your task, Dr. Meacham. You've assembled an interocitor, a feat of which few men are capable.
So, come up to the lab.
Mad scientists, evil geniuses, and unchic geeks. There are so many ways to make fun of scientists. Well, if you're ready for something different, there's a new genre in town, Lab Lit. Serious, literary fiction with characters who do real science. Jennifer Roan runs a cell biology lab in London. She's also a novelist and the founder of a website that's at the center of the new movement. Jenny, how did this all begin?
Well, I was working in a biotechnology company, and I was doing a lot of reading. And I noticed a trend that I had noticed a little bit earlier on in my life, that there were not a lot of scientists in normal fiction. So not science fiction, but sort of mainstream novels about normal people. And I had noticed this initially when I was in graduate school, when I was given a really interesting book to read, which had lots of passages highlighted with highlighter pen. And I thought, God, these must be sex scenes. But actually, it was going around the rounds in the labs, and it was a book with scenes of explicit biochemistry underlined. It was really funny. It was a book about scientists, but it wasn't science fiction. There were no aliens
or
time travel. It was called Cantor's Dilemma by Carl Tarassi, who I'd never heard of. He's a very famous scientist. And I thought, this is great. This is a book about scientists. This is my world. It'd be great to read another story like this. So I went to the library, went to the bookshops, and I couldn't find anything. There were no other novels about scientists. And eventually I did launch my website, lablit.com, on the basis of having found a mere 120 or so novels with scientists in them ever published, ever. And the number has gone up, you know, nearly 10 years later. We've accumulated about 200 titles ever written with a scientist as a central character.
But science plays such a huge role in our society. I mean, doesn't it seem strange and curious that the actual world scientists inhabit, their labs, their culture, doesn't show up more in fiction?
It is strange, and I also thought perhaps it is that writers tend to be arts and humanities graduates, and maybe they just don't like science. You know, there's a lot of people who avoid science as much as they can in school. The minute they can stop taking any math or science, they stop. And perhaps this sort of antipathy or fear or just boredom about science. Maybe you had a really bad science teacher and you think science is boring.
Could it also be that science just doesn't lend itself to fiction?
Oh, definitely not. Science is a really human endeavor and there's lots of passion. There's people who are very competitive. There's people who are very jealous of other people's results. There's the opportunity for skullduggery. Of course, there's the opportunity for romance. Lots of really interesting scenarios, and they haven't been covered a million times in fiction. You know, it's brand new territory. It's sort of a gold mine of potential plots.
Well, one way you set out to change that was by writing a couple of novels yourself. Give us a quick sketch.
Well, the first one is about a workaholic. This is a male workaholic, and I know a lot of people like this who just spend 24/7 in the lab. They have no life, and this is about a man who's like this. He doesn't see beyond his test tube. So that's the first story. And the second story is a little bit more close to home. At the time that I started writing, I was working in a biotech company in the Netherlands, and it was kind of funny because this company had only one idea. It was a really, really great idea. And they were working on a product, a cancer cure, based on this one idea. And when I got there, I thought, wouldn't it be funny if this whole idea was wrong?
So, a little worse than funny.
Yes. I thought, what would happen? And then I thought, what if you were a new person like me who had just come to the lab, and the first experiment you did, or maybe the first couple of experiments you did, you suddenly realize, hey, wait a minute. What they said is true about this science is not true. And the story is about what happens next.
I know that you said that one of the things you wanted to do with those novels was to get the atmosphere of the labs right. What does that mean? What is it about a laboratory atmosphere that you wanted to portray?
Well, I think laboratories themselves are very sort of scary places. There's lots of machinery and things that go ping and lights and flashing things and funny sounds and funny smells. But within the laboratory culture, there are lots of really interesting people. Labs tend to be populated by an international group of fairly young people, you know, between the ages of 20 and 40 is the average age of a researcher. So you've got all these really interesting people from around the world stuck together in this very compressed environment where everybody's striving to discover something. There's obviously a little bit of competition going on. But by and large, the feeling of being in a lab is one of camaraderie. You become really close to what you call your lab mates. You go out together, you have drinks together, you really suffer together. And it's fun, too. People are really funny and amusing. Scientists, people don't think of scientists like that, but they actually are really funny. So when you get a bunch of scientists together in this atmosphere, they say the funniest things, they do the funniest things. There's a lot of practical joking going on. It's really stimulating. So I wanted to get that idea across, that a laboratory is a living, breathing room full of really odd, quirky, smart people, and when they get together and do things, it's an interesting story.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm listening to you and thinking, not only have I not read that in many novels, I haven't seen it in film either that much. It must drive scientists like you crazy to go to the movies, and over, the scientists you see fit into, I don't know, certain cliches. There's the mad scientist, but then there are others.
They used to be. I have to say, that is no longer so true. If you look at Hollywood scientists now, they tend to be really good-looking people, like Rachel Weisz, for example. Just, okay, they may have designer spectacles, but they are Hollywood stars. Like Will Smith in I Am Legend. This was a zombie movie, or a vampire movie, but he's a scientist. He's wearing a white coat. He looks great in his white coat. He looks really sexy. He's not your typical mad scientist.
Maybe we're moving into a stage where scientists are romanticized, that brave genetic engineer saves humanity, which must be fun to watch as a scientist.
It's fun, but you know, I have to say, although the physical stereotype of the mad scientist is gone, largely, I think, from fiction, what remains is the stereotype of science as something that man was not meant to meddle with. And this is an ancient meme going back to Greece, where, you know, you have people who are getting beyond themselves, they were getting too close to the gods. You know, you're not supposed to know too much. You're not supposed to meddle. And this meme is still running through most of the films. So if you look at I Am Legend with Will Smith, I Am Legend, the whole thing kicks off because the character played by Emma Thompson, a well-meaning, sort of befuddled scientist, she's designing a gene therapy cure for something and it gets let loose and turns into this zombie virus epidemic. If you look at almost any movie with this theme, you will find that that's what happened. The scientist is well-meaning, loses control, the world's about to end, and sometimes another scientist steps in and saves the day, like Will Smith. But nevertheless, the precipitating event was a scientist who was a smarty pants and just went too far.
So it sounds like whether they're portrayed as insane or visionary, scientists still tend to be cast as troublemakers. Is that so bad? Going back to Copernicus and Galileo, science is about challenging assumptions and paradigms and pushing the envelope.
I think you have a good point there. But we do have a PR problem as scientists. They're more trusted than other professions like journalism and politicians. But when you see polls about would you trust a scientist, they're not right up there. And this goes back again to why I think LabLit is important. Because if you read a really great novel or see a really great film about a really well-meaning, hardworking scientist who's obviously a human being with human problems, you might think, oh, you know, this is the science business. It's a little bit more complicated than I thought. It's not black and white. But these people are not evil. They're people just like me.
Do you think publishers are discovering that there's more of a market for lab lit?
No, I don't. The recent successes in lab lit have by and large been through established writers. So people who are already famous, like Barbara Kingsolver is a great example. Mm-hmm. Allegra Goodman's written a nice one.
Anne Patchett.
Anne Patchett. It's another good example. These are people who already have a track record. Mm-hmm. So if you're a debut novelist and you have a lab lit novel, I really think it's difficult. I know a few people who've done it. I've done it and a few others, but it's not easy. The editors think that people don't like science. And I think it's because they don't like science, because they're arts and humanities graduates who hate science. And we know people are interested in science. It's a great appetite for popular science, so nonfiction books. People eat them up. They like documentaries. They like science fiction. We know people like science. And I don't understand what it is about novels that keep science out so rigorously. Mm. It's almost as if people think novels are not compatible with science, which really bugs me, because we know it is.
Well, maybe there's some agents and editors listening. Thanks so much for talking, Jennifer.
No, you're welcome.
Jennifer Roan runs a cell biology lab in London. She's the founder of LabLit.com. She's written two novels, Experimental Heart and The Honest Look, both of them set in biology labs. The music we're listening to, by the way, is an example of chiptune music from the band Starscream. It's made from the hardware and chips of old computers and gaming systems.